pushing for this as a replacement to the North American Free Trade Agreement, but some Democrats and labor leaders say more work needs to be done to hammer out more worker protections. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Well, good afternoon on this Friday. Rather cold, dismal Friday. Can't believe we're really in the middle of October. And I do apologize that I was not here last week. Actually, it was a good day for me. My husband was released from the hospital after a lengthy stay, but that meant that I had to go and pick him up. In any event, I'm back. It's the law. Been a very, very busy week, and actually there have been a number of cases and decisions that would certainly be of interest to some of the folks out there, the listeners. So the first thing that all businesses who have arbitration clauses in their contracts need to be very careful about is that an appellate court gave a couple half of what they wanted when it ruled on the enforceability of a contract that they entered into with a home contractor. However, they said that the contract's arbitration clause was too vague to enforce. So very, very important. Honestly, anyone who has an arbitration clause in a contract should have an attorney who knows what they're doing look it over, because this can be a real minefield, especially if you're trying to use some kind of what they call a standard contract. One of the things that I have found often in New Jersey is that it really makes absolutely no sense to use something that you get on the internet or offline, because we have very specific laws in New Jersey. Also, you have to be careful about using something that's too old, because things change, and it's very important that somebody who knows this area knows what's the latest in court cases, etc. So that was one of the things would be of interest, should be of interest to anyone who's doing business, who has contracts, especially construction, electrical, plumbing, all of those contracts that may have an arbitration clause. So the another big decision, and it certainly helped a group, they received a $24 million verdict in a dispute with Valley Hospital. And the jury award of that $24.3 million, this was to a group of neurosurgeons who sued over the revocation of their staff privileges by Valley Hospital in Ridgewood. Obviously, for most of us, it's just simply of interest. But, of course, if you're someone who is a doctor or medical professional whose hospital revokes your privileges, that would be significant. Also significant for any hospitals to take a look at this case so they don't fall into the same, problem. And, very, very expensive for the hospital. Yeah, I'm not going to get into the details of the case because, frankly, I just, don't think that this is of much interest to most of my listeners. There was another employment litigation. There were the township. Randolph Township appealed the award of temporary disability and medical benefits in a workers' compensation case. And the petitioner injured his neck, back, and shoulder while lifting logs at work and filed a workers' comp claim. The township filed its answer past the time limit and did not deny that the petitioner had injured his shoulder or back, but denied that he had injured his neck. And, of course, at this point, the petitioner had filed a motion for medical and temporary disability benefits, supported by an affidavit from his attorney stating his treating recommendation, his treating physician recommended shoulder surgery. I'm dealing with some military issues right now, so please excuse me. Shoulder surgery, not soldier. Anyway, can't distinguish between those two words. It's his shoulder, that portion of our, it's at the top of our arm. But in any event, the township refused to authorize the surgery and asserted that the petitioner was injured at his other job. The township produced no certification or affidavit as to petitioner's alleged other job, no evidence that disputed that the surgery was needed, and ordered the surgery to go forward and that the township pay for it. So then there was a motion to vacate the order, and the court noted because this was workman's comp initially, so the court noted certification submitted by the township in opposition were not signed, did not include the verification required for certifications in lieu of an oath, were not notarized, and could not be considered by the court. And the opposing papers consisted of a letter brief not based on personal knowledge. So that is another problem, and a problem we find often, that certifications or briefs are not based on personal knowledge. And that is, a no-no. And so in this case, the appellate division said that the workers' comp judge did not abuse her discretion in declining to relax the rules for the township. Important. There was a family law case that what is important about this case, Kremper v. Kremper, and that was not published. Oh, I'm sorry. So was the, I thought that the employment litigation case that I just cited was a published case. It was not. So that family law case, Kremper v. Kremper, was also not published, which means it was cannot be used as precedent. But what is significant about this case, and often something that's kind of ignored or overlooked when someone comes back after a judgment of divorce and they want to make a change. And so the criteria for that is whether or not there was a change of circumstances. And it's usually the showing of change of circumstances. Often they say it's a substantial change of circumstances. This was interesting because the parties in this case, it dealt with parenting time at the holidays. And the court actually had a plenary hearing, and after the plenary hearing, granted the motion of the plaintiff, finding that the plaintiff had made a showing of changed circumstances based on family dynamics and the neutral custody assessor who indicated the children wanted to have what they considered a fair split of holiday time to prevent loyalty conflicts. And so then there was an appeal, and on the appeal, the appellate division rejected the contention that the trial court abused its discretion in finding changed circumstances. And specifically, the appellate division noted that the children had requested more fairly split time and between their parents, and affirmed the trial court's conclusion that a fair schedule would be in the children's best interest, since they would not have to choose sides between their parents and would be able to spend important moments with both. Very, very interesting, because very often, as I said, it's extremely difficult to show that there has been a substantial change of circumstances to change anything. But it shows that even in when somebody has agreed on custodial arrangements, and in this case, parties agreed to joint legal and physical custody and a 50-50 parenting schedule. The difference was the holidays, because one parent had been raised Jewish, and so the issue was parenting time on Christmas Day and Easter and certain Monday holidays. But that shows that, in fact, based on, in this case, the change dynamics of the family and a custody assessor, a neutral custody assessor, who indicated that the children, what they wanted. So the children's views are important, not that they control. There was also a case, a family law case, but interesting again. There were orders in this case denying the disclosure, the wife's disclosure for distribution of the defendant's bank account and her application to correct an order concerning the party's property that they owned in India and other things. And there was also following the settlement agreement, which there was a settlement agreement that incorporated the judgment of divorce, there were allegations, and there was a prior appeal in this case, and the court had ordered the defendant to produce bank statements demonstrating the alleged distribution from his accounts. And so there, you know, the court in this case reversed and remanded the denial of the request for the bank account information, noting that its prior order directed defendant to disclose information about his bank accounts. So the question is, why in the world, based on that, didn't the trial judge require it? And so the court, however, the court affirmed the order concerning the apartment in India, noting the trial court had previously permitted defendant to offer to buy out her interest in the apartment. And they also, appellate court, affirmed the denial of counsel fees because there was no finding of bad faith on the part of the defendant in the trial court. So that was what it does show is how often it is difficult to get the appellate division to overturn what has been done at the trial level. There was also another case, Polamenti, where there was the defendant appealed from the order denying his unopposed motion for child support and physical custody. So that would be rather unusual. But the parties had joint custody with the plaintiff parent of primary residence after their divorce. And what happened is the trial judge in this case found the defendant made a showing of changed circumstances but did not provide any analysis showing the best interests of the children and did not address the statutory factors. So apparently, in addition to seeking custody, he also asked to terminate his child support obligation and to compel child support from his former spouse. And the trial court terminated his child support obligation because the children resided with him. Well, that made a lot of sense. Of course, I'm not being facetious. But denied the motion for child support because he did not provide an analysis of the statutory factors. And apparently, the defendant also filed incomplete papers, and the statute required the trial court to consider the statutory factors. And so the case was remanded to the trial judge to undertake that analysis. So actually, even though it was unopposed, nothing, he didn't win. So you can't assume that somebody's going to win just because something is unopposed. And also, of course, the court always, the appellate court always, almost always puts in a decision that the scope of their review of the trial, of the family part orders is limited. And they defer to the family part's findings of fact because of that court's special expertise in family matters. This decision is seen, or reference to Cesar v. Cesar, is seen over and over and over again. And so that is, once again, something they put in the decision in this case. And, of course, what is true is that there's no special deference owed to the judge's legal conclusions. Okay, so it depends. Legal conclusions, they will not disturb factual findings unless they're convinced that the findings of the trial judge are so manifestly unsupported or inconsistent with competent, relevant, and credible evidence to offend the interests of justice. However, that is not the case when they're handling and dealing with legal conclusions. So, interesting case for people who, that was the case where there was an apartment in India, and again, interesting case for those of us who handle international cases. In fact, I do. There's a case on an appeal by the other side when, in fact, there is a very valuable property in another country. And I think what the trial judge did was absolutely what should have been done, but obviously the other side filed an appeal in the case. So let me give you some spots from our sponsors, and hope you, some of the spots obviously are from the Chamber of Commerce. And the other thing I want to do before I forget is remind everybody that tomorrow night, October 12th, there is a barn dance at the Buffalo Farm. And if you don't have any plans or your plans aren't that interesting, I'm trying to find more information about it, which I have now pulled up. But it's really going to be a fun time. It's the 5th annual Harry Copeland Barn Dance, named after Harry Copeland for lots of reasons, and anyone who knew Harry would understand this. It is supporting volunteer guardianship one-on-one, and the event is going to be tomorrow from 5 to 9 at the Reddington River Buffalo Farm. And if you've never been there, it's at 937 County Road 523 in Flemington, between Flemington and White House, very close to where 629 crosses 523. Music, live music by Sundog. There's going to be barbecue, dancing, auction, beer, wine. Tickets are only $40. And you can order your tickets at volunteerguardianship.org, or better yet, just come out tomorrow night, 5 o'clock, 5 to 9. You'll be directed, drive into the driveway at the Buffalo Farm, and there will be people directing traffic. If you have that Western hat and, you know, Western boots, be sure to wear them. There will also be I don't remember the name of the group. They're a square dancing group, and they're going to be putting on demonstration at about 7 p.m. But this is really fun, and there will be 50-50 tickets that you can purchase. In fact, I'm hoping I have a few more to sell myself. But nobody can guarantee anything. But if you don't have fun at the barn dance, I don't know where you would have fun, because it's just so much fun. Probably will be about 150 people there. Food is great. Food is by Q Barbecue, and there'll be desserts, and as I said, there are 50-50 raffle tickets. There will be a turkey tray with some interesting items, and beer and wine, and as I said, great organization. It's benefiting volunteer guardianship one-on-one, and this is a nonprofit 501c3 organization that provides compassionate one-on-one guardianship services to legally incapacitated adults, and also provides education. There are a lot of really good educational seminars throughout the year in Hunterdon County, but the dedicated volunteers really are so helpful. And in fact, if anyone knows of an incapacitated adult or someone who's going to be deemed incapacitated, legally incapacitated, volunteer guardianship, you should reach out and find out more about it. So now I'm going to get to, as I said, I also need to talk about the weather, which I'll do after a couple of these commercials.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Everybody should be listening to that last spot from NAMI Hunterdon. It's so important, and reach out to them if you have any concerns about a family member. Once again, we have suffered a very tragic loss this past week with one of our young people from Central who committed suicide, and I'm not saying you can prevent suicide if somebody is absolutely determined, but it's something that we all have to be more aware of and try to get anyone who is depressed to services, find out about the services available, because there are many services available in the community. And I don't think that we want another tragedy before we're thinking about this. So that's something that's so important. And I will now give one more spot, and then I'm going to give you the weather for this weekend.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Okay, well, what about the weather? Today has been overcast, about 66 degrees. Low tonight and mostly cloudy of about, there's going to be about 45 degrees would be the low tonight. Tomorrow, high of about 66, partly sunny. Into tomorrow night, we'll get down to about 47 degrees. And then on Sunday, a high of about 65. And Monday, high of about 70. So mostly sunny both on Sunday and Columbus Day Monday. So if you're off of work, you should have a nice weekend. And again, we should have good weather tomorrow night for the barn dance at the Buffalo Farm. And, starting out probably still in the mid-60s and should be really, very good weather. And it is, in fact, in a barn. There'll be as I said, there's a dance floor. There will be the square dancers. There will be the DJ, there's a DJ. We will have a DJ. We will have the music. We'll have good food. So this is really a fun thing to do if you have other friends and come together. But if you don't have any friends, don't let that stop you. And as I said, the organization, the tickets are $40, which are, very reasonable because there will be beer and wine and very good food. So, frankly, most people could not go out and get anything other than maybe a hamburger, certainly not drinks for this price. So come on out.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them...
Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Well, we're back. It's the law. And one of the things I wanted to point out, especially in family law cases, the appellate division... I don't know what percentage. I would think it's almost always. Somehow they remand the case to the trial judge, and then whatever they're asking the trial judge to do. In this Polimini case, what they did is they asked the judge to undertake the required analysis, including the defendant's request for legal fees, because The statutes say the courts shall consider the factors when determining child support, and the although the defendant in that case submitted a certification, apparently he did not submit a brief or memorandum or a certification in support of his request for legal fees. Now, most of the time, counsel do not file memorandums when it comes to the issues post-judgment, you know, because one of the things and one of the problems is these matters get so expensive, and to have to file a memorandum, a legal memorandum, in cases that are so common, you know, most of the time, really, there should be no necessity for that. So the one of the things that the New Jersey Supreme Court mandated training for all state court judges to better handle sex assault and other sensitive issues. So what they're going to do is close the courts in order to do that. Apparently that's not going to be part of the judicial conference that takes place every year the week of Thanksgiving. Now, a New Jersey appellate court turned back a constitutional challenge to an order threatening debtors with imprisonment if they fail to comply with a lender's discovery request. So, interesting. It was, you know, is it debtor's prison? In any event, the appellate court agreed that they had to do this. This is this was a discovery order. It was not a published case, but this is Provident Bank, and the defendant in that case appealed from a trial court's discovery order compelling them to comply with plaintiff's discovery requests or face imprisonment, you know, due to the writ of, there's a special writ that was, you know, we think of as ancient, but it's still apparently viable. And so they obtained a loan, the defendants in this case obtained a loan from the plaintiff, and they executed personal guarantees and submitted personal financial statements, and they claimed to own a home valued at $1.2 million and $700,000 in security, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they defaulted on the loan and declared bankruptcy, and so the defendants in this case unsuccessfully petitioned for personal bankruptcy. And so the plaintiff was seeking to recover on the personal guarantees. Well, what this shows, or should show everyone, is be very careful when giving personal guarantees, especially for someone else, because you're going to be nailed for it. So in this case, the default judgment was ultimately entered against the defendants, and then to collect the judgment, plaintiff filed a verified petition for discovery to obtain an order, etc. So this was the petition for discovery that plaintiff filed, and for all of this information, and you know, then accordingly, based on this, the defendants asserted a Fifth Amendment privilege against discovery, and they said they were citing allegations in the bankruptcy proceedings that they had fraudulently procured the loan. And so the trial court, as I said, granted the motion for an order enforcing litigants' rights to discovery. And on appeal, the court noted that the defendants were complaining, and this is interesting, of a prospective and unmaterialized violation of their Fifth Amendment privilege because the trial court had not yet held a Fifth Amendment privilege hearing. And so as a result, the appellate division ruled that the trial court was authorized to order defendants to appear at such a hearing, and finding that they had not sufficiently demonstrated the risk of criminal prosecution from the bankruptcy proceeding. Interesting. There are, lots of cases with respect to people trying to assert a Fifth Amendment protection. And very often they don't succeed. Now, of course, in a criminal court, someone does not have to, disclose anything that would be incriminatory. And they would, in fact, be able to claim Fifth Amendment privilege rights. So a trial court in a case, the issue of where a child primarily lives is crucial. And this case said that the trial court was in error when it stripped custody from the parent of primary residence following a move to a different part of the state without holding a hearing. So that's certainly very, very significant because now what this trial judge did was take custody away from the parent because the parent moved to a different part of the state and should not have done that. Certainly should not have done that without a plenary hearing. So hospitals are obligated to provide a narrative roadmap specifying the location in the patient's chart where an adverse medical incident is documented. So the hospitals are trying to they're concerned about doing and giving such disclosures. I'm trying to think of, there was a criminal case approved for publication, and that was a conviction for possession of Schedule I narcotic with intent to distribute. It's still a big problem. And moved to compel the state to provide him with certain discovery and to suppress the evidence seized. So he wants the evidence that was seized following execution of a search warrant. So the trial court denied the motions, and as a result, the defendant entered a conditional guilty plea. So what does that mean? Conditional guilty plea, reserving his right to appeal the denial of this discovery motion. So, on appeal, the defendant argued that his discovery motion should have been granted because the requested discovery would not have revealed any confidential information. And he further argued that the trial court failed to properly weigh the aggravating and mitigating factors and imposed an excessive sentence. So the appellate court reversed the defendant's conviction and remanded for further proceedings. So that's always perks up everybody who's in prison to see if they can ride that win. But the appellate court noted that the state allegedly failed to provide the defendant with a lab report that detailed the test result of the suspected narcotics, the informant provided to the detective. Okay, so this is what happened. There was an informant who provided the police with a certain substance. And the court, in this case, noted that the state allegedly failed to provide the defendant with the lab report detailing the test result of the suspected narcotics. Now, those were narcotics the informant provided to the detective who prepared the search warrant application. And so what happened is the defendant's attorney submitted a written request for the information, acknowledging that redactions would be necessary to protect the informant's identity. So that was conceded. So there was redactions that would be necessary. And however, the court held that the state's failure to respond made the defendant's ability to succeed in his hearing more difficult because the defendant could not prove that any of the detective statements were false. So, you know, obviously a detective is standing there, or I should say sitting there, testifying, and what the defendant was looking for was the information needed to try to prove that his testimony was improper or did not support what the court was trying to do when they prove, you know, they did this evidence or this alleged evidence that was turned over to the detective, did it prove there were drugs and what kind of drugs, etc. And the on appeal, they said that the court incorrectly concluded that the defendant was engaged in a fishing expedition for the informant's identity. Now, however, the appellate court ruled that the timing of the consideration of defendant's motions unduly prejudiced him because he needed the discovery materials to have a chance at succeeding in the hearing. And then the court held that, in this case, the state was required to provide the discovery that had been sought. Number of personal injury cases. Malpractice cases. And there was another case where the appellate division gave real estate developer Bruce K. a second chance to seek disgorgement of $1 million he paid to an attorney who committed fraud and malpractice while serving as his general counsel. So, okay. Well, there are a number of other, actually, there are a number of other cases. A federal judge in Newark approved a $21.95 million partial settlement of a price-fixing class action. And this was a group of 13 syndicates of underwriters affiliated with Lloyd's of London. Well, there's Newark versus Township of Jefferson tax case that was decided, proof of publication. Again, most of the cases were not approved for publication. Fired Wall Street executives gender bias case moves to New Jersey as both sides filed new complaints. So a former, the appellate division. So this was a situation where a female former executive director at Bramshill Investments launched a gender discrimination and retaliation lawsuit. So it's important to figure out what, in fact, the basis for these lawsuits are. So, and the retaliation lawsuit was against the company and the Wall Street investment firm. And in this case, the I think that's about all there is to say at that, because it, what it does say, though, whenever we're looking at anything, is that people do need insurance, specifically malpractice insurance. And I will come back after a short break so you can hear some more words from our sponsors.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Well, there have been a number of cases. Obviously, there are always a number of cases that have not been approved for publication. But certainly, attorneys who practice in that area of practice should be familiar with even the unpublished cases, because sometimes they can actually be more helpful if you have a case that's just very similar. Now, we can't cite to them unless we cite and give the court all of the other cases pursuant to that issue, and most of us, obviously don't keep all of the cases unless it's in an area where we practice. There was a family law case, though, U.S. National Bank Association versus Ahmed, and although it was creditors and debtors' rights, it had to do with family law. And in that case, the defendant appealed from a final judgment of foreclosure. And that was entered for the plaintiff, U.S. National Bank. And that prioritized the bank's mortgage lien over any other liens that the defendant had. or any interest that the defendant had in the property. And he had actually purchased that property in his name. Thereafter, he and the defendant, who was then his wife, resided in the property. The defendant subsequently failed to sign a refinance mortgage that Ahmed had obtained. Thereafter, defendant obtained a fee interest in property when the husband, well, this gets very complicated, when it was conveyed to him and the defendant wife as husband and wife, and Ahmed later was the divorce. Later was the defendant in the divorce case. Well, the defendant argued that his former wife's interest or wife's interest was independent of her marital fee interest, and that it was not extinguished by her divorce or by merger of her ownership interest. And the court rejected his arguments. So again, this is very specific unless you happen to like esoteric issues. But the court in this case also said that the defendant's marital possessory interest was extinguished by her divorce. And the court then agreed that the plaintiff was entitled to judgment under the equitable theories of reformation, equitable lien, and equitable subrogation. So, what other cases? There aren't too many. There was a personal injury case where she was a passenger on a motorcycle which crashed on a ramp entering an interstate. So ramp entering an interstate. The ramp was dark because only one of six streetlights was working. Stop sign was also on the left side of the roadway. And the police testified to many I'm bogging down here because I'm trying to read this. The investigating officers actually described the scene as very dark and unsafe. Officers never took a statement from the motorcycle driver who disappeared. So plaintiff testified that the motorcycle was going about 25 miles an hour. There were experts, both eyeliners and liability. So the court in this case, meaning the appellate court, found that plaintiff presented genuine issues of fact and that she was entitled to a jury trial. Well, that's about it. There's not a lot more going on. I'm trying to see if there's anything much of interest. Pretty much run out of time. Now there was an action in the appellate division. No, I don't think that's of significant interest. Again, there were a lot of creditor-debtor rights questions. It was a case to motion to suspend or modify alimony, and after a long marriage, and the court find, in that case, the court found no reason to disturb the trial court's finding defendant failed to address whether this, whether his termination from employment was involuntary. So there, it is easier today to file a motion with respect to alimony. Of course, the court has to go through all of, has to go through everything. It can be as time-consuming as the trial itself, and that's one of the things that they should have gone through the 6 o'clock list. Okay, let's hear from a few more of our sponsors.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heidi and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
Well, back on, and actually it's time to shut us down, go to the news, and after news we'll be back with the sports guys, and I will be... hopefully, I will have Bill Wolfson and John Manfreda, the other two sports guys, will join me. So back after the news.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin is warning Turkey and other nations that sanctions will be levied against the regime if their attack on Syrian Kurds in the northern part of the country is deemed to be going too far by the administration.
We are putting financial institutions on notice that they should be careful and that there could be sanctions. Again, there are no sanctions at this time, but this will be the broadest executive authorities delegated to us.
A massive wind-driven fire has now damaged or destroyed at least 25 homes in the Los Angeles area. L.A. Fire Chief Ralph Terrez says the Saddle Ridge fire is also deadly.
I'm sad to report that we had one civilian male die last night from cardiac arrest.
The fire is growing at a rate of 800 acres per hour. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
So there's this guy named Jordan, and he's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. But then he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched from medical insurance to MediShare, which is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. So the question for Jordan and his wife Jenny was, is this really going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. If you want to find out more, here's a number for you. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
The Pentagon has announced 2,000 more troops will be sent to Saudi Arabia. USA Radio Network's John Clemens has the details.
The deployment includes two fighter squadrons, two batteries of Patriot missiles, a terminal high-altitude area defense system, and an Air Force headquarters unit. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Army General Mark Miley, explained the purpose of the deployment to Saudi Arabia.
This deployment of additional forces to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia is for the purpose of defense of our interests and assets in the region, and also to reestablish deterrence with respect to Iran in the wake of an attack on Saudi Arabia.
With USA Radio Network, I'm John Clemens.
In an unprecedented move sure to face many legal challenges, California Democrats